You're listening to Greater LA, KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're ready for a drag show! All right.
Yeah, you better be ready for a show, because today we're introducing you to a local drag queen with an unconventional resume.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, once again, my name is Maybe a Girl. I am one of the co-hostesses and producers of Wigs and Waffles. We are here every Saturday at the Standard Hotel.
Now, every Saturday, Maybe hosts a drag brunch over at the Standard, which is in downtown L.A. She dons an 80s power suit, pearls, and a sleek blonde bob.
Let's get some mimosas going around, and in the meantime, give it up for Miss Rainy Day.
Yeah, it's a raucous, mimosa-filled romp for a cross-section of L.A., hung-over-looking 20-somethings, families, business travelers, tourists who have clearly never seen a drag show before, and they're eating up every outrageous impression along with those waffles and rewarding dance moves with dollar bills. Now, Maybe a Girl uses her drag name offstage, too, including on the first Wednesday of every month when things are decidedly more low-key.
I'm going to call the meeting to order. It is about 10 minutes after 7.
In April, she won a seat on the Silver Lake Neighborhood Council, making her the first drag queen elected to public office in the United States. So how does she straddle these seemingly disparate worlds? Reporter Courtney Kosak takes us to Silver Lake for the story.
Drag is having a moment right now. Over the past decade and 11 seasons, RuPaul's Drag Race has seen its audience swell with rabid fans eagerly tuning in to see queens
lip sync for your life.
It's almost become mainstream. In previous years, a political candidate in drag would have likely been treated as a joke. But in 2019, nobody's laughing. Though perhaps RuPaul can't take all the credit.
If I could say there is any sort of small silver lining of the current administration, it kind of just is that anything goes in politics right now. If Donald Trump can be elected president of the United States, why can't Maybe a Girl be elected to local office?
Of course, she had to test that hypothesis. In January, she decided to make a run for Silver Lake's Neighborhood Council. The neighborhood councils are organized by the city of LA as liaisons between city government and local communities. Initially, she didn't know how her neighbors were going to respond. However, once people got to know her, they quickly got on board.
I had the support of the people that I was running with. I had the support of the neighborhood. In fact, the biggest challenge was almost getting some of the drag queens in my drag queen community to believe that I was serious about it, you know? they were like, is this a show? I like released my campaign flyer and they were like, is this for a show? I'm like, no, this is for real.
She convinced her fellow queens that her political aspirations were genuine. Though it's easy to see why they were confused. The drag world is rife with camp and satire. But drag isn't just a performance to her.
For me, drag is so much more than just, you know, putting on heels and a wig. For me, drag is actually a part of how I express my gender identity. So I identify as gender fluid. I feel like both a boy and a girl, sometimes a little bit more boy, sometimes a little bit more girl. Mm-hmm. Hence, my name actually really does make sense, Maybe a Girl.
As the way we view gender has become more flexible, it's easy to forget that it hasn't always been that way. Like when Maybe was growing up in Pittsburgh, and then suburban Chicago.
I don't consider my parents bigoted, but to casually throw around slurs against gay people, I think that was something that was a lot more acceptable back in the 90s than it is now. And so I remember this one time I like overheard my mom use the F word, and mm-hmm. it made me really sad, because I thought, well, if she hates them for that reason, she's going to hate me for that reason. But, you know, sometimes all it takes is for somebody that is ignorant to talk to somebody that is of that class of people that is being oppressed. So I think for a lot of people, their turning moment is when they realize, oh, I have a loved one who is queer. And then you realize this is just a person. This is not some, you know, boogeyman. But I was really lucky to have the support of both of my parents. Many queer people do not have that good fortune. That's why many queer people are thrown on the streets when they're teenagers, which I think is absolute garbage.
One of the issues Maybe is passionate about is homelessness. especially amongst queer youth.
In fact, here in Los Angeles, out of all of the homeless youth in LA County, 40% are LGBTQIA youth.
She sits on the homelessness committee of the Silver Lake Neighborhood Council. She also put forward a motion to create a new committee that formed a few months ago.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maybe a Girl. I am one of the co-chairs for the LGBTQIA Advocates Committee.
Though she's not just concerned with LGBTQIA issues, but rather centering marginalized voices of all kinds.
I hate when people say, oh, I just don't understand why we have to deal with all these identity politics. Well, you don't understand because you're probably privileged and your identity isn't at risk. You know, you don't have to worry about not having the same rights. You don't have to worry about going onto the streets and being discriminated.
Right now, there are lots of folks throughout LA County who have anxiety over how their identity may affect their rights and well-being. And they're worried about the direction our country is headed. But Maybe remains optimistic.
I think that a lot of people think that things are unchangeable when the nature of everything is naturally changeable. And, you know, I think that we have dug ourselves into a rut in terms of how we take care of our people in this nation. But I don't think it's something that is insurmountable. But it's something where everybody has to be aware and everybody has to pitch in. And the easiest and most simple way you can do that is by voting.
And she'll be taking every vote she can get, because she's going to be on the ballot again next year.
I'm so excited. So I just announced that I'm running for Congress. I'm running for the U.S. House of Representatives, California's 28th congressional district.
She knows Congress is a reach, but maybe she's not discouraged. She's got dreams and she's willing to hustle to achieve them.
It's so funny. My drag character sometimes looks, you know, like a rich white woman, but I'm honestly anything but. You know, it's really interesting to be running for Congress and then wake up and go and open up the restaurant and go buy ice and make drinks and, you know, serve people food.
A few times a week, Maybe waits tables on the lunch crowd at an Echo Park bistro.
I'm a regular person out here trying to fight for regular people, and I'm not a career politician.
But she is running up against one. When the primary rolls around, she'll be facing off against a well-funded, longtime incumbent, Adam Schiff. But her role model is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who won a surprise victory last year against a strong Democratic opponent.
It's the same thing that AOC did. When she unseated Crowley, everyone thought it was a joke that she was even trying. You know, it just seemed like, no, there's no way that's going to happen. And it happened. And there's such an opportunity for that to happen here in this situation as well.
But win or lose, this election won't determine her future in politics. Much like with drag, Maybe is hooked, and she doesn't anticipate her political pursuits ending anytime soon. And like RuPaul, she's inspiring a whole new generation.
I've gotten so many messages from young queer people just saying, thank you for providing this visibility. You give me hope. I had this one person message me. They're a teenager, I think, in like Texas. And he said, you know, I've always wanted to do drag, but I also want to get into politics. And people have told me you can't do both. And I just want to thank you for showing me that you actually can.
To Maybe a Girl, politics and drag aren't all that different. After all, she says, being gender nonconforming is a political act every single day. For KCRW, I'm Courtney Kosak.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. If the Trump White House is at one end of the boxing ring and the state of California and its 40 million citizens are at the other, then this is a fight for the ages. An ongoing war between the state and the administration has covered many issues over the last 2.5 years. Immigration, the census, the environment, that's a big one. And now the Environmental Protection Agency has sent a letter to the state of California's Air Resources Board threatening to withhold transportation funding. We're talking billions of dollars. Anna Phillips covers the environment for the LA Times. She's with us right now to talk about it. Hi, Anna.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. What is going on here? Give us a little more detail and some perspective about about what the EPA is saying.
Sure. So this is basically another step in this escalating fight between California and the Trump administration over air quality regulations. And what the EPA is saying here is that California has all of these plans, more than 100 of them. These are smog reduction plans that are supposed to be kind of approved by the federal government, and that these plans, there's a massive backlog of them. They've been sitting inactive for years. And because there are so many people in California that are living in regions that have poor air quality that's below federal standards, the EPA feels it's time to step in and threaten the state and say that if you don't get these plans where they need to be in the next 12 business days, then we are going to start imposing sanctions.
Sanctions, which is, hey, these are federal highway funds that we're not going to give you.
Exactly. That's what they've said they would pursue. And that's within their power to do that. It's just that there's actually kind of a lengthy process they have to go through before they do that. So it's not as though they could turn around after 12 business days, decide that California hasn't met the standards that it needs to meet, and then just cut off the funding.
So there's a process for sure. But I wonder how unique this threat is. Do things like this happen with other states?
This is a very extreme step to take. There's typically a conversation. There are steps that states take to improve their air quality. Then they go back to the EPA and say, look at what we're doing. Is this good enough? The EPA says yes or no. It's really a conversation that's supposed to go back and forth as they try and work towards meeting these standards. But to, you know, very publicly come out and say, we think you basically are, condemning millions of Californians living in poor air quality. We think you're not doing enough. You know, saying that to a state that really is considered a leader within the United States on environmental issues, that's pretty extreme.
Yeah, I mean, what it boils down to, and I'm going to ask you, the administration is saying on one hand, we want you to loosen your fuel efficiency standards, right? We don't like the fuel efficiency standards that you have. We want to make sure that you're not able to do that on your own, the waiver that was in effect for decades here in California. And if you don't do that, we're going to punish you because of your bad air quality. Do I have that right?
Yeah, the feeling in California among environmentalists and politicians is that this is a very hypocritical position to take, because we know that the most effective tool California has to improve its air quality is our really tough car pollution regulations. And those are the same regulations that the Trump administration wants to do with. So on the one hand, they're saying, we're going to sort of tie your hands, make it more difficult for you to improve air quality, and then we're going to accuse you of failing to improve air quality.
What is the EPA's record on air quality issues in the Trump administration? Has it been holding a hard line on air quality standards in general?
Under this administration, the EPA's agenda has really been to take the side of major industry and to say, in fact, our air quality restrictions are too strict, that they are too tough, and to take various steps to roll them back, whether that is lifting regulations covering methane emissions or other pollutants that are released as part of manufacturing or part of the oil and gas industry's work. In general, what they've done is try and roll back regulations that have been put in place under the Obama administration. So again, what California has pointed out in this situation is that this is quite unusual for them to be coming out and saying, you really need to pay more attention to your air quality.
Pay more attention to your air quality, despite the fact that we're trying to loosen every regulation that would make the air worse.
Exactly.
If the administration follows through on this threat, how much money are we talking about that the California stands to lose?
The administration hasn't given specific numbers for what they would withhold or what they're considering. The Sacramento Bee reported that California is expected to receive on the order of $19 billion over a four-year period. It may well have already received much of that funding. That's not clear. So that remains to be seen.
That remains to be seen. And this, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, when highways, freeways in California are built, or any federal highways are built, it's usually what? Isn't it like an 80-20 match? It's 20% from the state, and the vast majority of the money comes from the federal government.
I don't know what the exact matchup is, but we do rely very heavily on those funds. And, you know, there are projects all over the state that are waiting for the green light for these funds to come through.
I mean, we've heard over the years different administrations, and I can think of, you know, even the Nixon administration when states had higher speed limits, and they said if you don't lower your speed limits, you know, because we've got this gas shortage or we've got an oil issue around the world, then, you know, if you don't lower it to 55, we're going to withhold highway funds. If you don't raise your drinking age from 18 or 19 to 21, we're going to withhold federal highway. So this is not new that the federal government or that an administration threatens to do that. How real do you think this threat is?
That really depends on who you talk to. I would say that the sense I got from talking to people in California today is that I do not think that they are overly concerned. They view this very much as a political tactic and not as a serious argument that could stand up in court or elsewhere.
Stand up in court. That's the key question. Do you think this is going to wind up in court again, which California, we're talking dozens of times, that the state has sued the Trump administration?
Yeah, I think as of yesterday, the Attorney General of California said that he has now sued the Trump administration 60 times.
60.
Now, not all of those are environmental lawsuits, but many of them are.
But a lot of the issues that we, you know, I told you at the outset, we're talking about the census and immigration, many other things, too. And the environment is also a big part of it. Anna Phillips, who covers the environment for the LA Times. Anna, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, coming up, we've been talking a lot about climate change in the past week, and folks in Orange County are thinking about sea level rise. But what is their plan? Gustavo Arellano is in next. Thanks for listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. The Climate Summit at the United Nations ended yesterday, and on this program, we talked about the effects climate change will have on Greater LA in the coming years and decades. It's not a pretty picture. And it's no different in Orange County, where sea level rise in particular has some of the coastal towns thinking about how to plan and how to protect themselves for the future. Gustavo Arellano writes for the LA Times. He's here with today's KCRW Orange County line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
You and I have talked before about how the OC coastline is already seeing some damage related to sea level rise. Where have you seen some of those effects?
Everywhere. It's quite stunning what has been happening to Orange County, even in my lifetime. So down in Capistrano Beach, you have boardwalks knocked down. The rainfall this past year was so bad that a seawall that they had built in around the 1960s, that they had put old cars and put concrete on them, you can now see those cars. That's Capistrano Beach. You go to Laguna Beach, you see some of the smaller beaches, they get covered, they're completely submerged now. You go to Seal Beach around November, December. For the past couple of years, you start seeing news reports on TV like, oh, the king tides. King tides are completely natural, where they go above and beyond what the usual high tide does.
And there's flooding.
Yeah,
those,
and right? Now there's more and more flooding every single year. It used to be like every couple of years. Now it's every single year. So all across Orange County, the coastline, it's happening.
All right. So the California Coastal Commission gave this presentation recently at a Newport Beach City Council meeting. What did they have to say? What did the presenters have to say about the effect of climate change on the coast there?
The same thing they've been saying for a while, but now it's coming from the Coastal Commission. Climate change is happening. More importantly for you folks on the coast, the sea is going to rise. Now, maybe they give a 92% chance of it rising 1 foot, a 58% chance of rising 2 feet, and then the worst case scenario, what they think, it'll rise 6 feet. And that's only what they think. That's their worst case scenario. Of course, this is nature. You never know what exactly is going to happen, except that you should be prepared.
And there are extremes on you know, in given times. At any certain time, there could be something really bad that happens, or maybe it's not that bad for a few years, and then it gets really bad again.
But they said it's happening. It's happening, and you've seen it in the past 40 years. Now imagine in a century from now, or, you know, we're 2019, so 79 years from now, because we're not 80 years, it's going to get worse.
Does anybody in Orange County, do they believe these folks? I mean, like the Coastal Commission predictions, you know, the dire perhaps predictions from climate scientists.
It's like Chicken Little or The Boy Who Cried Wolf or some sort of fable. They know it's happening. They know it's out there. Again, they've seen it in their lifetime. The LA Times, a paper that I work for, obviously, earlier this year, my colleague Ando did this great story about what's going down in Capistrano Beach. And in the online, there's a picture of what used to be the Capistrano Beach Club, where they had like a swimming pool and all that. And it was so far away from the ocean. This is back in the 60s. Now that beach club's long gone, the water is like right there where it used to be. It is happening. So you cannot deny it. But I really, it's almost a human thing. Like, well, yeah, we know it's going to happen, but it's not going to happen to me. So therefore, let's just live life like nothing's going to happen.
Talk about Balboa Island, because this is an interesting part of this conversation. Balboa Island. Well, first of all, where is Balboa Island, and specifically, how does it factor into climate change?
Balboa Island, very quaint island, right there in Newport Beach in the harbor. A lot of, you know, you say quaint, but they're like multi-million dollar cottages. It's really cool. You go for a day out or whatever. But it was never really an island. It started off as a sand berm, and over, you know, 40, 50 years, they made it into the island that it is today. So it was never meant to be an island. So they built a seawall there, oh boy, back in the 40s or 50s. And then about 5 years ago, they moved to raise it about 6 inches. They wanted to raise it 18 inches, but the residents there are like, no, you're going to ruin our multi-million dollar views. Well, again, the ocean's rising. So what they're probably going to do is literally jack up the island. In other words, build over everything.
What are you going to do? Take some jacks? Is that like a house where you're trying to, you know, sturdy up the foundation?
That's the official term, jack up the island. No, what they're going to do, they're going to build all the subterranean stuff. So we're talking electricity, we're talking sewers. They're going to build it above ground. Then on top of that, they're going to pave over it with, you know, with the asphalt and whatnot. And they're probably going to have to move the houses up. That's the, and of course, with the Coastal Commission, that's not what the Coastal Commission wants. What the Coastal Commission would like is what they call them a managed retreat, where you basically get out of the way because the water's going to come. This is not what they want, but this is Orange County. Specifically, this is Newport Beach, old money. If they want to stay there, they're going to stay there one way or another.
Do people have flood insurance in Orange County just in case?
Here's a problem, according to the Coastal Commission. Most people don't. Most people don't have it completely funded, and most flood insurance in Southern California, and I got shocked by this, it only goes up to $250,000. Now, those houses all on the beach, they're probably going to start minimum, if you're lucky, $900,000 nowadays. So even if you have flood insurance for your home, it's not going to help you for anything at all. Like, it really is a problem there on the coast. But again, oh, you go to the coast and everything's so beautiful. And if you happen to be one of the lucky few who live there, well, if you're already lucky by living there, then you're going to be lucky because climate change is not going to hit you at all.
That, of course, tongue firmly in cheek.
I am just telling
Gustavo
you how it works there.
Yeah, all right. Gustavo Arellano, KCRW's Orange County Line. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
Well, on this last day of the KCRW OneDrive Pledge Drive, and we thank you for your support of public radio, join, renew, upgrade your membership on this final day. If you're already a member, now's the time to maybe bump it up a little bit. If we can raise $35,000 by midnight tonight, your pledge will be matched dollar for dollar, courtesy of KCRW board member Sari Kane. So thank you so much for your support of public radio. That's it for us today. Tomorrow, a place you can light up and eat. Next on KCRW, a special program that highlights the winners of KCRW's annual radio race. And at 2 o'clock, live coverage of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and a possible impeachment inquiry. It's all yours. Ahead on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for being here.